You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I'm your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my X&O work for InsideThePylon.com. Follow my draft and fantasy work for BreakingFootball.com. Follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He covers the Eagles for Bleeding Green Nation. He does his draft work over at NDTScouting.com. Go check them out. Benjamin Solak, S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing?
It's been too long, Michael.
It's been too long.
I'm always well. It was a crazy holiday season, man. I was in and out. I was at home. And then Locked On Eagles listeners, thank you so much for bearing my absence, having to deal with Mike on his own. I know it was tough. But I was at a conference for a week doing college kid things. Got back home. Got very sick during the conference. Up back at school now. And so everything is hopefully settled here for the playoffs. But dude, it's nice to be back in the saddle. I missed this, so it's good to be home.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it was a weird couple of weeks. Holidays, you being out of town, me trying to figure my life out at the same time. So we're going to try to get back to our usual midnight release throughout this week. Thank you so much for bearing with some erratic show releases in the past couple of weeks. We promised to get our stuff together, but look, we got some playoff football to talk about. So going over this weekend, we'll just give some roundup here, a rapid recap. First game of the playoffs was a doozy. Andy Reid and the Chiefs blow a 21-3 lead. Marcus Mariota throws a touchdown to himself, and Derrick Henry closes it out to give the Titans a W, 22-21. Later Saturday night, Falcons take down the Rams 26-13. Rams look shook. Experience matters, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. But the Eagles will play the Falcons in the divisional round. I'm fairly happy about that. We'll get to that as well. Sunday featured the worst playoff game in recent memory, with the Blake Bortles-led Jaguars defeating the Bills in a 10-3.
That's an interesting way of saying best, Mike. I've never heard best pronounced like that.
Look, I don't know about you. I refuse to watch most of that Jaguars-Bill game. I literally got to my car and drove as far away from that game as possible.
I'll tell you this. So I'm relatively new to Twitter. I know you are as well. Before I had Twitter, when I watched football games, it was just a pretty regular, like, linear regression, probably exponential, actually, for how enjoyable a game was versus how much I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But now that there's Twitter, it's an inverse bell curve, right?
Right.
If a game is very enjoyable, then I enjoy it. And if a game is not at all enjoyable, Twitter blossoms into this magical place where everything is hysterical because people just rip to shreds everything that's happening. And it's, oh, the tweets fly, and it's a wonderful experience. It's anarchy, and I love it. You don't want to be in the middle, which is like a kind of engaging game where the favorited team stays up by 10 to 14 points the entire time and everything happens as you expect, blah, blah, blah. Nothing is fun, right? So I had a blast with, firstly, the lead up to Jaguars Bills, the two most trash talkiest teams I've ever seen for both being kind of bad in recent history. And then all of the table slamming and the nonsense and the bickering about the tickets. I thought it was a production. I thought it was hysterical.
Yeah, probably the pregame, like the collages of people being thrown to tables, and then the Blake Bortles just pour it on him on Twitter for the entirety of the game. That was the best part of that. So that saved that game for me. But I experienced that Twitter experience in my car for most of the game, because after the first half, I was like, I have a choice. I'm an adult. I can leave this situation.
The power of personal choice, man.
Right. Yeah. So, Ben, before we get to the obvious topic of this week, that being the playoff matchup with the Eagles against the Falcons, I wanted to ask you about the Rams, because this is something that we've touched on before the season and leading up to the playoffs. Experience matters in the playoffs. And the rest week for the Rams, where they sat their starters, only seemed to make things worse, because it took them nearly a whole half for that offense to start clicking. Are you with me on this, or do you feel that other factors had a bigger impact in the Rams dropping this one at home?
We're saying, how much of an impact does playoff experience have on a team?
Yeah, playoff experience, and then also resting your starters for a week because they came out a little bit rusty.
All right, I'll start with playoff experience, because I have a very defined take on this one, which, if we're sticking with the so far episode theme of Ben talking about graphs, to me, it's not like, it's not linear. You know, it's not like, oh, if you have, you know, X amount of experience, then you're Y safe to, like, you know, come out of the playoffs and not be messed up, not be starstruck. To me, there's kind of like a cliff, right? There's a point to which you have to get, right? We're talking about a Rams team that had six players with playoff experience, 21 total games of playoff experience on that roster.
Two starters with playoff experience, yeah.
That's significantly lower than most teams, right? Jacksonville, the Bills, the Titans, all kind of a little bit low, but the Rams still significantly lower than everybody else. To me, having... the Patriots have 41 players with 317 games of playoff experience. The Falcons have 36 players with 174. I don't think there's much of a difference between those two, even though 174 is almost half as many games. Like, I don't think that's a very big deal.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that having very little playoff experience does matter. Just, it's in your head. Like, even if it's not a real thing, the narrative alone just kind of, you know, makes you think you're in a playoff game. It's different, right? And so I think for sure that you saw that affect the Rams. Now, the Eagles, you know, looking forward to what they've got coming up, you've got a quarterback who did start a playoff game in an Eagles uniform against the Saints, actually, in Nick Foles. That was under Chip Kelly a few years ago, of course. Uh-huh. They're right around the middle as far as comparing to this season. They've got 24 players with 74 games. I don't foresee it being an issue. I'll put it to you that way. I think this team is veteran enough that they should be fine. They don't have a lot of guys who have played a playoff game in an Eagle uniform or like in Lincoln Financial.
Right.
But I think that they should still be comfortable with the veteran leadership and the experience that they have. So I'm not too worried about that for Philadelphia. That's my take on playoff experience. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think as far as a team that's being led by, for instance, a Nick Foles without their starter, things change so late in the season for them. You either rally around that or you fold, basically. I mean, that's the way I see it. It's emotionally taxing what they've been through in the past few weeks. I think that plays more of a factor than any of those other two factors that we talked about, whether it be the experience or resting guys or where the case is. You know, they didn't play, the starters didn't play a full game against the Cowboys. That game didn't really matter. I said that they should play. I still stand by that. I don't think it made a difference at the end of the day because, I mean, it was pretty bad for the offense, but I thought the defense played well. You know, we found a starter at linebacker with Danelle Ellerbe. There were things that were accomplished.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. As far as the Rams go, like you said, it's a big difference to have no experience as opposed to like a bare minimum. And then after that, it really doesn't matter for me too much. Like you said, 174 to 300 and whatever really doesn't make that much of a difference to me. But yeah, good points. So look, we are recording this right after the New Orleans Saints Carolina Panthers game. Started out with the Saints leading 21-9 at halftime and ended 31-26 in a clench your butt heart pounder that the Saints almost gave away at the end there. There was the intentional grounding. Devin Funchess forgot how to contest a deep ball, apparently, but he was also dealing with a shoulder injury. That was interesting.
Yeah.
How did you feel about how that game went? Saints look pretty dangerous, man. Not going to lie. Saints look real good.
I would have much preferred to see the Saints team come out and roll over Carolina the way they had rolled over everybody else. I did not want to see the Saints come out and roll over Carolina the way they haven't had to roll over anybody.
Right.
Because, you know, you were kind of thinking, oh, the Saints have been running it so much. Drew Brees isn't as responsible anymore. It's a working formula. But what happens when you force Drew Brees to throw it and to play like a classic Drew Brees playoff game? And the answer is he can still do it, which is a problem. The Saints put up a performance that should definitely put the rest of the NFC on notice for sure. I will say, in my weekend preview, I did say, you know, I think the Saints will still win it. But a lot of people were predicting that the Saints would just kind of walk all over Carolina. Obviously, Carolina, you know, the offensive skill position just kind of ripped apart with injuries, wide receiver especially. But I thought that Carolina could keep it close. I thought that, you know, it's very difficult to play a team three times and to handle them three straight times,
right?
Which is what you were asking New Orleans to do. And they weren't able to do that. Carolina's defense stepped up in a much bigger way. And then obviously Cam had a heroic performance. Cam is such a polarizing figure. I shared a text I got from my mother. My mother's a huge football fan, but she's not very like in depth or anything. She just kind of likes it at a face value, and she hates Cam because of how he acted after the Super Bowl with the Broncos. So she has this like unrelenting vendetta against Cam, which is really funny. He's a very polarizing figure, but to me, in a vacuum, his play in that game was exceptional. It was really fun to watch. That was clearly a guy who understood that if they were going to win this game, he was going to have to turn in one of the best performances of his life, and he did. You know, and so that was just fun quarterback to watch. Brees versus Cam, that game was one of the best quarterback matchups I think we've seen. I'm still more worried about the Vikings than the Saints. I still think that the Vikings are able to handle the Saints in the dome at home, in Minnesota. I still think that advantage goes to the Vikings, but certainly, I mean, we've known since week 10, three powerhouses, maybe four, coming out of the NFC as far as the Vikings, the Saints, and the Eagles went, and then the Rams kind of being that fourth on the cusp. Obviously, the Rams with the early exit, they'll be a team that's around and is difficult for the next couple years for sure. As long as Wade Phillips is the defensive coordinator, they'll be fighting for a championship for sure. But yeah, three powerhouses, and then you got the Falcons, who I had the Falcons beating the Rams in my weekend prediction. I think the Falcons were the fourth most dangerous team, you know, kind of coming in because they'd be getting hot. They were 6 in their last 8 in the regular season. A lot of playoff experience. Dan Quinn is a very good coach. Eagles got a tough one. It's the best matchup they could have asked for, the way the cards fell, but it's still a tough one coming up in the link.
Yeah, we're going to get more into that matchup. First, I want to remind you, please, please, please go to iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Leave your Twitter handle in the review.
Oh, yeah.
We will enter you to win a free Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. Really helps the show, and we really appreciate it. All right, so Ben, you kind of touched on it already. So your instant reaction to the revelation that the Philadelphia Eagles would be playing Atlanta in the second round, because for me, this isn't the Falcons team of last year. I think everyone knows that, not by any stretch of the imagination. It's been well documented that they've been far less prolific than last year on the offensive side of the ball with the departure of Kyle Shanahan going from first in the league in points per game to 13th. Their defense is bottom half of the side of things in regard to DVOA, ranking 22nd overall. The run game in the last 3 weeks ranks in the bottom. I think they're 29th in the league in the last 3 weeks for their running game yards. And let's remember, Jim Schwartz held the Falcons to 15 points last year, which was a season low for them. That's when they were red hot. They also had season lows in time of possession, total yards, so on and so forth. You hope that it's a formula that he can duplicate. And we've talked about this before. This defense has the second biggest differential in points scored against when you're talking about playing at home versus playing on the road. How do you think this defense matches up with the Falcons as they look today?
Yeah, very, very interesting stuff. Philadelphia allowing 17.5 points on the road, allowing 9.6 points at home. We're talking purely offensive points here, by the way, 7 points for touchdowns. Actually, I don't have field goal stats. That's purely touchdowns, but they're allowing almost half as fewer touchdowns at home than they are on the road, which to me is a shockingly big stat. Philadelphia fans, y'all be doing a great job all year traveling and then at home causing problems. I think Philadelphia will have a sincere home advantage against the Falcons on Saturday in the cold, outside, not in a dome against the Southern Dome team. That looks really good. And then obviously Matt Ryan, I don't have the exact numbers. I was looking for them. I could not find them. I know that Matt Ryan got his first road playoff win last week, Mike. He got it this weekend against the Rams. And so I don't know how many games he's played on the road in the playoffs, but I'm going to guess it's been more than one. So I don't know how well Matt Ryan travels. That's something I want to look into to get into a deeper pod. But yeah, this Falcons offense, here's going to be the biggest thing. And anybody who's been listening to the pods, been reading my stuff, knows I've been hammering this home for a few weeks. Danelle Ellerbe, middle linebacker, you already brought him up, is becoming much, much more important for this Philadelphia defense because of what he allows you to do. We talked about Malcolm Jenkins moving back, everything like that. And if you don't know what that is, hit me up on Twitter. We'll talk about that more. But for this Falcons matchup specifically, if you watch that Rams tape, Falcons took a defense that had smaller undersized linebackers that were a lot speedier. You know, Mark Barron, Alec Ogletree, they're playing for the Rams. I think Barron may have been out, excuse me, but still the Rams, a little bit undersized linebacker. They ran a lot of 12 personnel, Mike. A lot of 21 too with Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman. So 21 personnel, that's 2 running backs, 1 tight end. 12 personnel is 1 running back, 2 tight ends. So that's an extra 3 guys inside of the box, only 2 wide receivers. And they ran a lot of football, they ran a lot of running plays outside of those formations, and then they hit the play action off of them. That's where they were the most dangerous. When you run 12 and 21 personnel, you need 3 linebackers in the box on defense. You cannot be putting multiple safeties in the box like Philadelphia was trying to do against the Giants. We saw how that went. They tried to do it against Oakland. We saw how that went. They need to be able to put 3 linebackers in the box. Danelle Ellerbe is going to see the most snaps he's seen in Eagle uniform against the Falcons, I would predict. That's my, you know, early Monday bold prediction. I don't know. And he's going to be a hugely impactful player. He's going to have some sideline-to-sideline range because Tevin Coleman and Devonta Freeman can move. I know you're huge on Devonta Freeman. You know, they can really boogie. And then you're going to have to ask Nigel Bradham to cover running backs in space. I think he's been very good at, but you got Tevin Coleman, one of the better pass-catching backs in the league. You know, you're asking him to do that again. And so big, big, big responsibilities for that linebacking core in Philadelphia. That's my biggest matchup I'm watching as far as the Atlanta offense coming in and facing the Philly defense on Saturday.
Yeah, and Thursday and Friday, we are going to break down the offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, maybe just the Friday show. We're working on getting a guest on here from Falcons media. But look, the run defense took a slip when we were trying to play nickel personnel or 3 safeties against, you know, 12 personnel, things of that nature. Oakland was coming out in like 13 personnel, and we had 2 linebackers and Malcolm Jenkins in there. It's just not going to get it done. Malcolm Jenkins is a darn good football player, but you're just not matching up size versus size very well in that situation, and you're not doing yourself any favors. So Danelle Ellerbe, definitely a key piece in that. Jalen Mills, Ronald Darby, because Ronald Darby's not going to travel around with Julio Jones most likely. How do you feel about that matchup? Just your first reaction to that.
So Julio's had allegedly a down year, which statistically, sure. I haven't gotten back into Atlanta tape to know how much he's been addressed by defenses as far as double coverage goes. And the like, I know he went for 9-94 this past game across the 17 games that he's, or excuse me, across the regular season, his 16 games. We've seen 88 receptions, 1,400 yards, Mike, in his down year, 16.4 yards per reception in his down year, 3 touchdowns. If you've been listening to the pod, you know I don't believe in receiving touchdowns. They're highly circumstantial and totally pointless. Julio has been productive. He's been dangerous. He hasn't been fed the ball the way he was last season, but last season we were talking about him as the best wide receiver in the league, and he's still up there in that conversation, certainly. But I'm saying there was a little bit of a regression that could be expected, especially when you change offensive coordinators. How I feel about the matchup, I think Darby's going to be physical with him. I think Darby's going to be able to move with him. I think it's going to be a good battle. You absolutely expect Julio to win a few, which is what you do when you're facing Julio Jones, when you're facing Antonio Brown, when you're facing AJ Green, Odell Beckham Jr. He's going to win a few. Philadelphia needs to be able to breathe and chill out and be okay with that. I'm much more worried if they don't shadow Julio with Darby,
right?
And Julio goes to the other side of the field,
yeah,
Mike, because Mills has been playing very poorly. And I remember I broke down actually Jalen Mills' performance against Atlanta last year when the Eagles beat Atlanta. I broke down that performance because that was the best game I've ever seen Mills playing in Eagles uniform. Mm. That was his rookie year up against Julio. At this time, there was like, you know, Leotis was like injured or garbage or something. Like Mills was CB1 at this time, and he was facing Julio pretty regularly. He did a great job playing physical, right? Getting into Julio's frame, tackling after Julio catches the ball, because Julio's yak ability, very underrated in my opinion. I'm worried about Mills on the opposite side. Of course, you can't turn up your nose at Mohamed Sanu either. Julio's running mate, a wide receiver. He's also dangerous. Physical. Philadelphia, yeah, they should have their corners on islands, as we've seen them do, and then we'll see. Atlanta often comes out with excellent game scripts, right? They come out like very well planned. Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator, knows exactly what he's doing for the first 20 plays, and then after that he struggles in game. And so I think you'll see a lot of, you know, double moves early, sluggos. They'll be running that stuff that they know Philadelphia bites on. What'll matter to me is quarter 2, 3, and 4 and how the Philadelphia defense adjusts. Jim Schwartz obviously trying to coach some good games. He's got some head coaching candidacies going on, so he wants to show out a little bit. Steve Sarkisian outdueled Wade Phillips for 4 quarters, which nobody kind of saw coming. That was surprising. Now he's got Jim Schwartz, a very formidable foe still on the defensive side. So Schwartz needs to be able to make in-game adjustments, something that he's struggled with a little bit recently. And in the event that Sarkisian outscripts him in that first quarter, get Philadelphia back in the game 2, 3, and 4.
And that's a good primer for what we're setting up for the rest of the week. Let's take a look at the overall picture for the AFC real quick. You've got the Jaguars going to Pittsburgh to play the Steelers, which is their rematch after Ben threw 5 interceptions in their regular season matchup. Back when Ben usually starts the season out, for the most part, pretty rusty, because I don't think he does anything in the offseason. So that's not surprising. I think he's much more in a rhythm now than he was earlier in the season back then. But still, man, that Jaguars defense is juiced up and ready to go. They are fun to watch. Then you've got the Titans and the Patriots. So Marcus Mariota against Tom Brady, of course, because quarterbacks play each other. That's how it works. And then you've got the other matchup that we haven't talked about yet is the Saints and Vikings, but that's on the NFC side of things. Jaguars, Steelers, Titans, Patriots. What's your gut reaction on who wins those games?
I'll tell you this. What I will do this weekend, with the money I make after John DeFilippo is named the head coach of the Chicago Bears, because I decided to put money on that because I'm pretty dumb, I will wait very patiently until about Thursday or Friday, when the Patriots line, as they are currently 13.5-point favorites against the Titans, I will take that line. I will wait it out until Thursday or Friday when it's about roughly 16, and then I will take the Titans against the spread, because you don't often see blowouts in playoff games. Because you're more likely to go and like give your starters a rest, especially when your starter's a 4-year-old quarterback. And also, it's a playoff game. They're naturally more competitive, so on and so forth, whatever. Patriots are going to win that game, but I will always take a 16-point spread in an NFL game in the playoffs when I can take it. I think the Patriots there. Jacksonville-Pittsburgh is going to be very interesting. I think that Pittsburgh is able to run away with that. especially if Antonio Brown is healthy. I don't think that Tomlin's going to lose to the same team twice. I think the Steelers desperately want another crack at the Patriots after the way that last game ended. Obviously, Jacksonville, an incredibly tough team. Watching how their fans travel will be very interesting because Pittsburgh notoriously a very good home stadium, but I think Jacksonville's going to be there in a pretty solid fashion. That to me, that's the game of the week. Just simply because of how many storylines and how much fun it is to watch Jacksonville play. And then that Steeler offense, obviously very prolific. I can see that going either way. I'm not sold on either place yet, but I definitely think I got a good feeling for the Steelers coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, here's my thing with the Steelers game. The Steelers will be able to move the ball a little bit. If they don't turn the ball over five times, Jacksonville's not going to be able to. Did you see how uncomfortable Blake Bortles was inside his own skin in that game?
It's so bad, Mike.
It's so awkward.
I remember watching Bortles at UCF, right, coming out in the 2014 class. This was like really the first class where I was like, I enjoy doing this. Let me look into it, right? And I just remember watching Bortles and they're just like perfectly clean pockets, and Bortles would be in there for like 1.5 seconds. He'd be like, you know what? I'm a dip. And I was always like, why? Just stay. It's fine, buddy. It's going to be okay. And now I watch him in the NFL, and every other play, it's either I've been in the pocket for 1 second, I'm out, or I've been in the pocket for 5 seconds, there's probably no pressure coming. Like, no player makes you scream at the television more than Blake Bortles. We'll put it that way. He is infuriating to watch. We'll see. If they can run the football, you know, control time of possession, that has to be the formula for Jacksonville going forward.
But honestly, it worked out well for Bortles in this game because he was throwing the ball like dog crap, and they were saying it was windy. It was like 2 miles an hour per wind there in Jacksonville. But it actually worked for them. He had more rushing yards than passing yards in that game, and it kind of set up. There's, it was so that should be honestly the plan for them. Just don't throw it. You got two running backs back there. Bortles is somewhat of a mobile and big
dude. He can move-ish. And that's the thing for Jacksonville is that, like, you laugh because it's like, all right, they just got to run the football and prevent Blake Bortles from throwing it. But the nice thing is that, like, if that works, it works against everybody. You know what I mean? Like, when Jacksonville faces the Steelers, their goal is going to be to keep the ball out of Big Ben's hands because he's far better than Bortles, so run the football. And then they're going to go on to face Brady. It's going to be the same thing. And then no matter who they face in the NFC Championship game, I don't care if it's Breeze, Foles, Keenum, or Ryan, all of them are better than Bortles. And so it's going to be, all right, we got to run the football, keep the ball out of the other team's hands, right? So they have a very distinct formula and path. It's, can you execute such a one-dimensional, plain Jane, white bread, it's the 21st freaking century, get yourself a quarterback formula against three playoff caliber teams? That's the issue.
Where you've got 8 men in the box because none of them are scared of you whatsoever.
The safeties were playing like 6 yards deep. It was unbelievable. I was losing my mind. Again, I cannot handle when Blake Bortles is on the television. It's unbelievable.
I actually want to look at that tape and break it down, like chart it in the offseason, and give the average distance of safety to line of scrimmage.
I would bet money there is at least one snap that is not like 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, where you can see all 11 defenders pictured. I actually believe that, which is unbelievable.
You don't even need the all-22. You don't even need the coaching film. You're watching Blake Bortles, guys. Free game pass trial right there. All right, Ben. That'll do it for today. You want to let the gentle listeners know what we have on tap for the rest of the week?
Oh, what's up, gentle listeners? How you doing? Obviously, coming up on Saturday is the Philadelphia Eagles against the Atlanta Falcons. We'll be running a pretty regular preview sort of week for you guys. Wednesday, we'll have the crossover Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons coming by. Very exciting. We haven't had a chance to talk with Aaron yet because we weren't able to get his audio for our big NFC preview pod, which you haven't checked that out. It was released on the past Friday. It has information on all the NFC playoff teams. That's a very good one. Make sure you go give it a listen. Locked On Network rocks. Friday, Thursday, of course, will be the regular preview days. We're looking into maybe a couple other guests. And then, obviously, as long as the Eagles continue to stay in the playoffs, we will continue to cover them. Of course, in about 2 weeks' time, you're listening to this on the 8th, Monday, when it's released. Mike and I will both be down at the Senior Bowl. And so if the Eagles are still in the playoffs at that time, God willing, we'll have all sorts of playoff takes for you guys. The Eagles will have just won their conference championship. They'll be heading to the Super Bowl. It'll be a ton of work to do. If not, we'll have a full week of Senior Bowl coverage for you guys, talking about all the draftable prospects that are there. You know, obviously, we'll be brushing elbows with a lot of guys. We'll be able to talk about what we're hearing as far as other teams in the NFC East and top prospects, so on and so forth. You know, that slow transition to draft season for Mike and I is a good time. And so we do hope you've enjoyed, of course. I've been Ben Solak. That's Mike Kiss. Please leave a 5-star rating review, as always, on whatever you listen to your podcast app. Hit us up on Twitter at Benjamin Solak, at Michael Kist NFL. Excited for playoff season, guys. Going to be a fun one.
So exciting. Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Ha ha! It was a wounded bird.